Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
On the 19.5 million people throughout the state that witnessed chaos and dysfunction at its highest levels. I profoundly apologize.
My bad. I'm Mike Peskin for Brian Lehrer. So the stalemate in Albany is finally over. That clip was Bronx Senator Pedro Espada Jr., who decided yesterday to refect. He's now back in the Democratic fold. He managed to score himself the title of Senate Majority Leader, which may not mean a whole lot, but we'll all be glad to know it's a little bit of a bump in pay. What happens now? Is everything just back to normal? Are the Democrats in the Senate more divided than ever? And I'm especially interested to hear from constituents of Mr. Espada, especially anyone who voted for him last time or any other time, which statistics show is just about everyone in his district. What are you thinking now? Do you think that he faces tough re-elections? You're his voters. Let us know. We're at 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC, people who are represented by Mr. Pedro Espada in Albany. I guess the same call would go out for any of the other defectors. Here, people in Queens are represented by Hiram Montserrat. Will punishment be in the air? Or do you actually think that something got accomplished? They woke up a state Senate, which wasn't actually notorious for being that functional anyway. Well, let's see who we have on the line with us now. Let's go to Ralph from Astoria. Is Ralph there? Ralph, I guess if you're from Astoria, you're not represented by Pedro Espada, but welcome to WNYC. Is Ralph there? Hi, Ralph.
Yes, hello. Good morning.
Good morning. Go right ahead.
It's a point of information question, really.
Yeah.
The last Village Voice cover article talked about, you know, the real reason that they went into the stalemate, they stalemated, Albany, is so that certain real estate, if I remember correctly, rules could expire, or some type of rules, and, you know, it'd go under the rug, and that when they would come back together again, everyone would forget about this. Is there any, do you have any information on that?
I will put the question to when we get one of our reporters from Albany, either Danny Hakem or another Albany reporter who we talk to, and he or she should soon be coming on the line with us.
Uh-huh.
And the question will be that, or more broadly, what else, expired because of this stalemate? But thanks for the suggestion, Ralph.
Okay, thanks for that. Have a good day.
All right. We have a constituent of Mr. Espada's, Tatiana from New York. Hello?
Yes, hi.
How are you?
I'm very well.
Have you voted for Pedro Espada in the past?
I have.
And in the future?
I will not be voting for him in the future. And having lived in many foreign countries and seen many different forms of democracy, I'm deeply disturbed by the circus that went on.
Having seen many forms of democracy, do you believe this qualifies as a form of democracy?
No, it's
Totalitarianism.
Totalitarian, thank you.
Yeah, I'm usually the tongue-tied one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you voted for him, did you even know who you were voting for?
Well, that's another issue that I have with the system that we have in place. I don't know if it's a New York issue or more broadly an American issue, in that I think that there's a very enormous lack of information. And then once you feel that you're doing your duty as a citizen, you go and you vote. But in fact, you're very misinformed, I think, of the actual issues that are being voted on, as well as the qualifications of the individual.
All right. Thanks very much for the call, Tatiana.
I think he should be fired, by the way. I think that needs to be said.
He's the Senate Majority Leader. I mean, he's
replaced
a long way from
being
fired.
Replaced with someone more efficient and that actually speaks to the people.
Thank you very much again for your call.
Thank you.
Janet from the Bronx. Are you from Pedro Espada's district?
Yes.
Meaning the district, and to clarify, the district he serves, not necessarily the district he lives in, which is a whole another issue, right?
Yes, definitely. When he was trying to get reelected, he would send to my home lots and lots of mail. And it's my belief, I believe, that he was not up there honest or doing something right, because how could he have so much money to send mail after mail after mailing after mailing? And it was all under the name of that mental health hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
he was putting up, like, festivals in the area. And yeah, Bloomberg has the money, but him?
Right.
I don't believe it. And I could smell like a rotten egg.
Did you vote for him last time, though?
No.
Okay.
No, and I will not.
And the other, your neighbors, the other people who lived in the district, were they just impressed by his name at the festival? I mean, I'm going to bet that you didn't have a lot of conversations about who your state senator was. But to the extent that you did, did you sense that he was popular?
Well, you can sense that people are just gullible. People just go with the flow, and whatever's in their face at the moment, that's what they do. They don't research things. They don't go and investigate before they do things. It's just what's in your face, and that's what Bloomberg is trying to do as well.
All right.
So, okay. Okay,
thank you, Janet. Any other Pedro Espada constituents? Again, Hiram Montserrat constituents. Anyone else who thinks their vote will in any way be affected by what we've seen over the last many days, the dysfunction in Albany? And Vertilla, is that your name?
Vertilla, yes.
Vertilla. Where are you from, and who's your representative?
I'm from New York City. Tom Duane, I believe, is my representative. But I'm calling because I'm just so upset about the reward that he's now getting for his efforts to throw the entire New York State Legislature into gridlock over it, apparently for power and position. The fact that he's coming back to the Democratic Party and is being rewarded by being given the majority leadership, which along with it comes a nice plum of a bonus there, in excess of $14,000, I think, is ridiculous. I can't understand how this transparent power grab and position for money and title is being allowed to stand. It's just mind-boggling.
Well, did you always have a certain view of politics in Albany where this stuff goes on, or did this open your eyes to perhaps
this
new lows?
This has really opened my eyes. I mean, I spent my whole life in New York State. Mm-hmm. I've been a resident in New York City for over 30 years, but I grew up in Albany. And this is a real eye-opener as to the dirty stuff that's going on. I heard that on the day that he defected to the Republican Party, a couple of bills that would have given vacancy rights, or anyway, it was pro legislation for renters, and it would have stood in the way of his pals. His landlord.
Yeah, this was the Village Voice. I think this was the Village Voice article that was mentioned before about, you know, how everything that went down affects renters and landlords and property rights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
now,
it's curious that he would choose that day to defect to the Republican Party.
And do you sense on the ground, as a citizen, as a voter, as a resident of New York, do you sense that discussion about the state Senate will heat up to the point like it does with presidential or even a U.S. senator? It just seems that all the elections of local representatives and senators, they're not really highly debated. I'm not going to call the voters a rubber stamp. Maybe they're just being played a little bit by our officials. But do you think that there's going to be more debate and more concentration on these offices in the future? Or will the public just go back to saying, oh, it's Albany, you know, you can't do anything?
I hope this serves as an eye-opener to all the people of the state of New York and around the country. I mean, it's not just New Yorkers who are watching this circus go on. And I think that on the heels of the grassroots movement that put the most unlikely candidate in American history, perhaps, in the White House today, has made people realize that, yes, your vote counts. Yes, your attention matters. And I think that anybody who is concerned about this should go on the New York State legislative website and write their own senator, which I did this morning, and also write Espada and let them know how they feel.
All right. Thanks for the call.
You're very welcome.
And now I think we have a guest on the line. Yes? All right. Let's go to Dion in Jackson Heights, a constituent of Hiram Montserrat, correct?
Yes. Hello.
All right. How you doing?
Hi. Well, I will not be voting for him again, especially from the history, from the problem with the domestic violence that what he was involved in, and then this issue with the legislative body. And I wanted to ask, what happened to Malcolm Smith?
Well, we're going to talk about him and play a clip of him. But did you vote for Hiram Montserrat last time?
I did, and I will not be voting for him again.
Had you,
absolutely not.
I'm trying to do the math. Was that the last election? Was the domestic violence charge known? Was that in the press already?
No,
it wasn't. It predated it. Okay, so he might have had some trouble getting reelected anyway. Well, thank you for the call.
Thank you so much.
All right. So what about Malcolm Smith? Here's some of what he had to say about the redefection of Pedro Espada, giving the Democrats back the control of the Senate.
What you see before you today, what you now know once again, is that Democrats have come together to move the state's business forward.
And that was Malcolm Smith. Danny Hakim reported in the New York Times that there is a racial component to some of the constituencies that have arisen in Albany. Malcolm Smith, I guess, as well as our governor, Governor Patterson, forming one block, an African-American faction, perhaps the polarizing people like Pedro Espada and Hiram Montserrat. And then there is even a third faction of white politicians. Who knows? Maybe they could be the deal breaker or the deal makers. I think we have with us now Bob Hart of New York One on the line. Hello, Bob.
Hi, how are you?
Thanks for joining us, Bob.
Thanks for having me.
Fill us in on some of the details. We had a couple of callers who were saying not only did this bring shame to the state, I don't believe how he could kind of get away with it, getting a raise and becoming majority leader. What will all that mean? What does it mean for him to be majority leader?
Well, I mean, the question is what – I mean, we're going to find out in the next couple of weeks, and probably not also some of it until the next session, which isn't until next year, what is on a Pedro Espada's agenda. The other thing that we're really going to have to look out carefully for is what kind of pet projects in his district are going to be approved, they're called up in Albany, Lulus, what kind of Lulus money for certain projects in his district will he get? Those are the kind of things that it'll take weeks and months to find out about. In terms of legislative agenda, I don't think there's a lot different that is on Pedro Espada's agenda that wasn't on Malcolm Smith's agenda. The question is, he's actually been more supportive of gay marriage, at least talking about it, than Smith. Not that Smith wasn't for it. So we could actually see gay marriage, I don't think next week, but I think we could see it on the legislative agenda at least for early next year.
And once the Senate assembled, did they just begin passing all these kind of non-controversial bills?
They did, yeah. Last night they started passing a whole bunch of non-controversial things. Then there was a little snit between the Republicans and the Democrats. There was a little snag that they had to settle. It's not even worth really getting into. And then in the middle of the night they passed some more things, including the raising the city's sales tax by half a percentage point, which is something that Mayor Bloomberg really, really was pushing for, and he had put in a hiring freeze. Which he now just said on his radio program earlier today that he's lifting, and that the police cadet class of 250, which he suspended, he's now going to be hiring.
Is there anything Democrats can do to punish Pedro Espada? He seems to hold all the chips.
Well, the thing I think he was worried about was if he stayed with the Republicans, would there be a Democratic primary challenge for him next year, a year from this September? That's probably going away now. I think that was one of his concerns. The other big concern, I think, is he saw his stock perhaps collapsing with if this appointment of Richard Ravitch as lieutenant governor is legal, if the courts find this to be a legal thing. Ravitch would have been a tiebreaker on some votes, which would have meant that suddenly Espada's stock isn't as high, wouldn't be worth as much. So he may have decided, hey, I'm better make a deal now in case this lieutenant governor thing actually happens to be legal.
So Governor,
although you do need 32 votes to have a quorum, which is something Ravitch wouldn't have been able to provide, but still, I think the appointment or the naming of Ravitch definitely was a factor in all this as well.
So Governor Patterson, who rarely gets good marks for political tactics, he's always painted or portrayed at least as ineffectual when it comes to knowing where the bodies are buried and how to get things done. The Ravitch move looked like a good move.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Even the editorial pages, they don't necessarily like Patterson, like the New York Post, said, hey, we don't know if this is legal, but we like the move. The New York Times applauded it. The Daily News applauded it. These are editorial pages that typically aren't clapping a lot for the governor. So in that
and
respect,
also, they're also editorial pages who don't usually like extra constitutional maneuvers or as a matter
exactly.
of principle wouldn't want to applaud that. But I guess tough times call for desperate measures.
Yeah, that's really true. And also, legally, I'm obviously not a lawyer, but it really is in kind of a nebulous territory. I don't think anyone would say he's explicitly breaking the law. He might be making the law as he goes along. I mean, there's a judge in Nassau County, Long Island, hearing arguments privately from both sides, the Republicans and the Democrats. And this, it'll be interesting to see how it hashes out in the end.
And I think we could fold into our conversation here Danny Hakem of the New York Times. Hello, Danny.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm good. I wanted to ask you and say hi to Bob Hart, too, of New York One. You guys are colleagues.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, Danny.
Danny, I wanted to ask you, because I saw in your reporting more than other places, you seem to break down that there seemed to be a racial component of some of the factions who are there in the Democratic Party. Could you detail that a little bit?
Well, I think after the coup on June 8th, I think the Democrats were really shocked by it, and they just became increasingly fractured along racial lines. And I think it's gotten to the point where there's four really identifiable factions within the Democratic caucus. And it's really made the Democrats difficult for any one person to govern. So, you know, right now you have three leaders. It's not really clear who's got what power. And I think it makes it uncertain how long this caucus will hold together.
Well, do you sense that? I know all along the way Pedro Espada was portraying what he did as a great moment for Latinos and Hispanics, como se dice, chutzpah. But do you sense that other Hispanics or Latinos who are aligned with him, you know, honestly believe that? Or is it just sort of real politic and grabbing the brass ring while it's available?
Well, look, I think there is definitely a feeling among Latino lawmakers that they never seem to get leadership posts. You know, they've never really had high-profile positions in the state or city government. So there's certainly a frustration there, which is real. Now, I think, you know, most people would say that Mr. Espada was, you know, was after a position for himself. I think that's certainly the prevailing view. But, you know, there is certainly frustration among Latino lawmakers.
And, Danny, Bob was just saying that perhaps out of this deal, the Democrats won't run someone against him in the primary for the district he serves up there in the Bronx. What do you know about that?
Well, I think that's probably right. I don't know that for a fact, but I think that's probably right. I think he's also got a pretty good base of support in his district. I mean, he runs this collection of health clinics that's sort of his power base. So I think, you know, I think a lot of people feel he's fairly secure in that district.
Because we just got a lot of calls from people disagreeing, but of course it's a self-selecting sample size that people will be listening to this show and tuning in to be outraged and so forth.
I think the feeling here is that he is fairly secure, but you know, it remains to be seen whether, you know, what happened in the last month will change that.
Bob, what do you know about how secure Hiram Montserrat may be, not only with what's happened here with the defections, but also the charges against him for domestic abuse?
I think the second part of your question is what's really going to be on his mind and determining his political future. If he's been accused of attacking his girlfriend, hitting her with a glass, that hasn't gone to trial yet. Obviously, if he's convicted of that, if he's convicted of a felony, he would have to step down under the Senate rules. But the Democratic, what that would mean for the Democratic majority isn't much, because it's a heavily Democratic district, and whoever would replace him in a special election would almost definitely be a Democrat. So if you're doing the political math, it wouldn't really change things. Obviously, it would be bad for Montserrat, but it really wouldn't change things much in Albany. There's just one other thing I'll just tell you. I just heard from our reporter out in Long Island, the Ravitch case has been adjourned till Wednesday afternoon. So there's no news going to be legally on that front today, at least.
All right. Let's hear. So what do the Republicans think about this? Dean Skelos is the Republican Senate leader. Let's hear a little bit from him.
This has not been just about power. It was about reform. It continues to be about reform. And also, we felt as a conference that we had to do something dramatic to stop the direction that this state was going.
Danny, did the Republicans achieve anything other than temporary obstructionism?
Well, it's hard to say what. I mean, and I asked Senator Skelos that very question yesterday. What did you actually achieve beyond something symbolic, perhaps? And he really didn't come up with any kind of answer. The Democrats have been pretty noncommittal about adopting the kinds of rules changes the Republicans are looking for. Now, they both, early this morning, they came out with a joint statement that, they said they promised to work on rules changes, but it was very vague and it wasn't clear what those rules changes would be. And, frankly, nobody has much credibility in Albany when they're talking about reform. I mean, the Republicans, controlled the Senate for more than the last four decades, and they certainly hoarded all the resources, all the legislative earmarks, which are known as member items. They pretty much kept everything for themselves. So, to have them now throwing around the word reform is, they don't have a lot of credibility on the issue. On the other hand, the Democrats, in the election last year said they were going to change everything, and they really haven't changed a whole lot. Last night, it seemed like they were trying to ram through legislative earmarks that would have been just as unfair as what the Republicans had done for years. So everybody says it's about reform, and never really seems to be.
This is Mike Pesca on WNYC. I'm in for Brian Lehrer. I'm speaking with Danny Hakim of the New York Times and Bob Hart of New York One. We do have this question. Off the top of your head, do either of you guys know what Pedro Espada's margin of victory was last time he ran? Was it even close?
I can look it up.
I don't know off the top of my head.
Yeah, I don't either.
Yeah.
But do you remember if it was a close election or one of these?
I don't believe so.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Without significant opposition, most of these guys.
I mean, it was he was running against Efrain Gonzalez, who was an incumbent, but he had been indicted, and I believe has since pled guilty. It was a contested race, as these things go. But I can't remember the margin on it.
Is it important? I guess there is a question hanging out there. What will, if anything, the majority leader do? Because the president has usually acted as majority leader. Is that right?
Yeah, the two titles have always been combined. So splitting them apart, no one really knows what that means exactly. In the state constitution, all the power is really vested in the Senate president. It really hasn't been spelled out to us what a majority leader on its own really means. I mean, if Senator John Sampson is the leader, they call him now the leader of the Democratic caucus, so he's effectively the leader of the Democrats. Senator Malcolm Smith is the Senate's president, so he would, if we have a lieutenant governor, he would be third in line, in the line of succession. It's not really clear where that leaves a majority leader, to be honest.
Bob, do you know what the recent turmoil does to things like the rent laws? A few people were calling about how this affects the legislation they were considering in terms of rent and landlords.
I don't think it's going to change very much. It's basically going to be business as usual. I don't think there's going to be any change in terms of things not being renewed. At least I haven't heard. Perhaps Danny has.
Dan, do you know anything about expiring housing bills or anything like that?
Well, I think rent bills have been one of the hot button issues up here. It remains to be seen if they take up some of the legislation that's been talked about. Espada is very close to one of the lobbyists for the the landlords, Stanley Schlein. It's not clear whether they're going to take up rent bills or not, but those have certainly been bills that have been very much in the mix at the end of the session.
As far as any bills, any policies, the defection, now the coming together, what policies do you think have been affected the most? What bills maybe were derailed the most significantly?
Well, I think in terms of high-profile stuff, same-sex marriage certainly that was probably the most high-profile bill that was being talked about at the end of session. And, I think the question now is, are they going to, when they return next week, and there is an outside chance they could come back today because the governor hasn't rescinded his special session, but, will they take up same-sex marriage? I think that's one of the biggest questions right now. But there's certainly other issues that they certainly will take up, like mayoral control, issues like that. So I think we'll see some of those more high-profile issues taken up next week. And vacancy decontrol, I think, is one of those issues as well.
Did you enjoy it? Did you enjoy the month? Did you enjoy covering it? Is it interesting?
Yeah.
Is it why you got into the business?
There are worse gigs for sure.
Bob?
The thing that's amazing to me is you had about 12 years where things were politically extremely stable/boring in Albany when you had Pataki as governor, Joe Bruno running the state Senate, and Shelley Silver running the assembly. And from the Spitzer era on, between the shenanigans Spitzer participated in up through now, it's just been an amazing, amazing time. Hey, getting back to your question about the Espada-Gonzalez primary in 2008, Espada got roughly 60% of the vote to Gonzalez's 40. And as Danny pointed out, Gonzalez was in a lot of legal troubles at the time. That's why he probably did as poorly as he did, even though he was an incumbent.
Of course,
in a state legislative election, 60-40 is a nail biter.
Right, it is.
All right, I want to thank both of you, Danny Hakem of the New York Times, Bob Hart of New York One. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll be back in a minute to talk with James Oberstar of the House Transportation Committee.